It's our Wide Open Road, the Rosie on the House Arizona Hour with Sanderson Ford.
And I blew right through segment number two where we're supposed to do our true or false giveaway for Arizona State Park passes. True or false? People in Tucson are quite familiar with Father Kino. But he was actually not the first one to the region. Marcos de Niza preceded him by nearly 150 years. True or false? If anything that's true, text true to 411-923. If that's false, text false, and we'll pick a random right winner at the end of this programming segment. We're featuring Patagonia as our staycation destination this month in our Arizona Hour, driven by Sanderson Ford. And there was a 1958, an officer named Sylvester Mori purchased a mine. It was real creative. It was called the Patagonia Mine until he bought it, and he came up with a really creative name, Mori, after he bought it. Employed 100 miners and dug out 1.5 million in lead and silver ore before he was arrested because that really inconvenient thing called the Civil War. He was arrested as a Confederate sympathizer, and while he was rotting away in jail, they plundered the mine, and it's now a ghost town.
I wonder which one it is. There's a few of them up there. Kentucky Camp, Harshaw. That's a beautiful corner of Arizona.
I think what I just heard is we've got to schedule a Rosie on the House mining expedition.
That's
to
it.
Go discover it.
That's it.
I think that's what I heard.
All right. I'm in.
Back to the CAP. We're moving past Lake Pleasant to our next significant feature, which would be, I'd say, my favorite's the intersection with the Salt River.
Yeah, the Salt River Project, CAP and the Salt River Project intersect right at the Salt River. We call it the Interconnect Facility. And so...
Stop 1 minute.
Yeah.
And I want the listeners to understand the complication. At that point, you're taking how much water west to east? How much?
As much as 3,000 cubic feet per second.
Okay.
Sometimes even a little bit more than that.
So... That's exactly perpendicular of the flow of the Salt River, which is flowing at what rate?
The Salt River, it's a little bit, it's controlled by the SRP, all their reservoirs, and so that's really dependent on demands. But it can be a couple thousand CFS, too.
So we've got to take water perpendicular across each other.
Yeah.
And come out the other side with as much as we put in.
Yeah, and we don't mix. At all.
And you don't mix.
So
that's cool.
There, you know, you might be familiar with someone siphoning gas or just using a siphon to move water.
Tell us, Marcus, how familiar are you with siphoning gas?
I've never done it myself, but I've heard that it can be done. So I'm more familiar with siphoning water. So we'll siphon all 3,000 CFS under... any major river that the canal crosses. And so the Salt River, when we go under that, all of that flow goes into 21-foot diameter pipe, a single 21-foot diameter pipe that goes under the river so that we're not intermixing with the Salt River flow, and then it pops up on the other side back into open canal. And then we do have a delivery point or a turnout right there where we can actually deliver water from the CAP canal down into SRP's system right there at the Granite Reef Diversion Dam.
How far underground is that pipe? How far under river do you have to go to not, you know, interrupt what I'm sure most rivers in Arizona have a significant amount of water that goes underground. We never see the surface water.
Yeah.
How far underground do you have to go for that?
You know, each river, it varies. And even on the siphon itself, it varies. So when the siphon starts first going underground, it might only be 10, 20, 30 feet. But then there are points on the Salt River siphon where to get down into the siphon, I believe, is, you know, getting close to 100 feet, a couple hundred feet even. So usually, though, you're just trying to get down below where the river won't scour out if there's any flood event and cause any damage to the pipe.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't imagine you just go down to Arizona Central Plumbing Supply and get a 21-foot pipe or replacement parts for it.
Yeah, I haven't bought one recently myself.
How often do you have to look at that pipe?
You know, we try to get in there. One of the tricky parts about it is that we're always watered up. And so we actually have an outage, a maintenance outage, that's starting at the end of this month where we're going to get in and do some work on recoating that pipe. And it's been the last time that we were really in there, just taking a little bit, was about 10 years ago. And then it's been more like 20 years since we did any wow. significant work in there. That's taken a couple of years of coordination with our customers and with SRP, so that everyone will still have water while we take that out of service for just about 6 weeks.
And I just want to add, Marcus can probably elaborate, is we have the capability of putting water into the SRP system at that point, but not vice versa.
That's correct.
And why is that?
You don't have a straw. You don't have a straw in that river.
You know, really the only reason why that is just because it would be – it's a good drop, 100, 180 feet, I believe, down from the canal down into the SRP system. So you'd have to put some pretty significant pumps wow. to get water back out of the SRP system and back in. We do a lot of we coordinate on exchanges water. Some of the CAP
customers. More
that
paperwork you were talking about.
Exactly. All on paper. But there is talk of looking at someday putting water from the SRP into CAP.
And I interrupted your train of thought, but I wanted you to finish that because I think that is so cool. You were saying some of the CAP customers indirectly get their water from CAP, but they're really coming out of the salt, and y'all just recharge what Salt River pumped out to your customer.
So there's lots of variations on how that works. We have some customers that don't have any infrastructure that is along the CAP canal, but they do have infrastructure on the SRP canals. And so SRP will do what we commonly call wheeling. They will wheel CAP water. So we will deliver water into the SRP system at that point, and then that water enters the SRP system, and it gets wheeled to a CAP customer further downstream.
That's so cool.
All right,
Who would have thought it took that just to be able to have water at your shower in the morning?
I'm not mean to tell you. Okay, so we've got the CAP now on the other side of the Salt River. Let's go back up to the Colorado River because Muhammad still has to deliver his 1.5 million cubic feet.
Acre feet.
And we're talking about your daily activity is sitting in front of a computer at a desk looking at models. Mm-hmm. I mean, how far out are you modeling? I mean, can you guarantee Marcus in 3 years you're going to give him his 1.5 million?
I can never guarantee that, but I can provide maybe some high confidence in those results. But we do... Our analysis, we can project out to 50, 60 years. Obviously, the further
really?
It's a model, right?
Yeah.
So it's a representation of reality. But obviously, the further you go out, there's less confidence. There's more uncertainty with the results. But I think more of the certainty is within the 2-year window because it's a, like I said, it's a snow-driven system. We have reservoirs, so... If there is, you know, let's say a very dry winter year, you don't necessarily get a shock to the system immediately because of the storage we have in those reservoirs. It's if you have several dry years in a row coupled with maybe lower reservoir volumes, then you start to see that impact trickle down.
Well, there's the second reason I want his job. Because if you're not fishing, then you're testing the depth of the powder at Vail Back Bowls. You're either skiing.
How's the snowpack?
You're either skiing or fishing. Well, am I too old to start getting educated for your job?
Not at all. Like I said on the break.
How do you get your job?
That's a good question. People
ask us that often.
I just have a background in hydrology and water resources. I guess maybe that's a start.
Wow.
Yep.
Interesting. Modeling forward, you know, what the Colorado River is going to have in it. Because we've just entered Tier Zero, right?
We're about to. Right. So
first time ever.
Yes. So Tier Zero will begin next year. It's associated with the Drought Contingency Plan, which was an agreement, a framework of voluntary contributions in Lake Mead voluntary sort of preemptive reductions on top of potential shortage reductions. So it's a way to store more water in Lake Mead because how do we determine shortage on the river is connected to the reservoir, the water elevation in Lake Mead Reservoir. So if it starts to go lower, there are certain elevations which trigger reductions to Arizona as well as other basin states in the lower basin. So tier zero, it's official, will be next year. And so that implies we'll have a first reduction in Arizona's water supply.
Now, that's what we're allowed to take out. Mm-hmm. And once someone, I don't remember exactly, but someone said, you know, it's really not going to affect us because we're not taking our full allocation anyway.
Right. So actually, prior to even next year, prior to currently, we've always been conserving water. We've always been involved in different conservation programs where we're storing water in Lake Mead. So generally speaking, that amount that we would take that reduction for, we've already been conserving that amount. So it won't necessarily change how we operate per se, because we've always been operating with a little bit less when you consider all the different conservation activities we've been involved in.
And on that conservation, there's the CHARD program that y'all have. Did I say that right? C-R, it's another acronym. But it's the CAP groundwater recharge.
Are you CAGRD?
Yeah.
Okay. The Central Arizona Groundwater Replenishment District. Yes, that's another function of CAP, and how that department program works is CAGRD helps Arizona to be able to continue its development. So one of their primary functions is in Arizona, per the 1980 Groundwater Management Code, because prior to us being able to get the Colorado River supply to Central Arizona via the CAP aqueduct, we were heavily reliant in Central Arizona on groundwater. So to limit that reliance on groundwater to prevent further subsidence, we are shifted to the CAP supply. One of the rules of the code is that new development has to have a 100-year assured water supply. What that basically means is the water supply that's being used for new development has to come from a renewable supply, aka, in our case, primarily the Colorado River. So what the CAGRD does is allow new development to occur by securing water supplies from the Colorado River. So if a developer or home builder comes, wants to develop in a new area, they tap into groundwater, likely if they're further out from our system, and then the CAGRD enables them to do that by then pumping or replenishing that Colorado River water into those aquifers that the new development has pumped out.
You know, I travel the country quite a bit, visiting with other builders, and their question is, when is water going to stop Arizona's growth? And I almost hate telling them the truth. I, having been here since 1966, mm-hmm. I'd like to say, well, we can't take any more. We can't take any more people. Mm-hmm. We're capped out. But Arizona is in much better position than the states all the way around us.
Yeah, and I think part of that is because we, at least in the Colorado River Basin, we're sort of a junior priority holder. So we always knew that if there was a shortage, we'd be cut in the lower basin, and we'd be cut the most. And so for a very long time, we've always been very proactive about how we manage our water efficiently, how we store water, how we augment water. We even have water augmentation programs as well as water conservation programs. So we're prepared for a shortage because we know that if it happens, we would be hit the hardest.
Well, it's an incredible statistic to try to understand is in Arizona with 7 million plus people, we're using the same amount of water as we were in 1960 with 80% less people. Mm-hmm. That's incredible. Mm-hmm. I think that's a huge testament to you guys and all the engineers that have come together to put our water situation in the great light that it's in.